This is Robert Martellacci, Chief Digital Curator of the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. This podcast is brought to you by C21 Canada, Canadians for 21st Century Learning and Innovation. I had the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment with Charles Fidel, a global education thought leader and expert, futurist and inventor, founder and chairman of the Center for Curriculum Redesign, visiting scholar at Harvard Graduate School of Education, co-author of the best-selling book 21st Century Skills, and recently published Four-Dimensional Education.
Thank you so much, Robert, and thank you for the introduction.
Well, you have been one busy man, as is evidenced by your bio. Congratulations on your new book, Four-Dimensional Education, The Competencies Learners Need to Succeed. What inspired it?
Well, you know, from the first book, 21st Century Skills, it became clear to me that a lot of the jurisdictions I was working with were having a hard time figuring out how to integrate all the demands that they were getting. Of course, they were not only about skills such as creativity, critical thinking, communication, and collaboration, but also about character, such as character competencies, and such as curiosity, courage, leadership, and so on. And that's not to mention the new and modern knowledge areas, such as entrepreneurship and so on. And so if you're an education minister, what are you to make of all of these demands? How do you clear up time and space
right
to teach more deeply, more impactfully, and yet add all the things that your environment is asking you to add that corresponds to a modern world? So we thought that it was very important to do a systematic analysis of how to come up with a framework that brings it all together in a cohesive ensemble that is compact and actionable for jurisdictions and policymakers to figure out what to make of all these requests.
Fantastic. What's the response been like so far?
Well, a lot of interest, quite honestly. This is also starting to be translated in a number of languages. And so there's a need around the world to figure out how to integrate all of these new areas of knowledge, what to remove from old areas of knowledge, and how to matrix knowledge with the competencies needed to succeed, such as skills, the four C's that C21 is so familiar with.
Yes.
Character competencies that we have described in a paper and in the book, but also meta-learning. In other words, growth mindset and metacognition.
And that's a relatively new thought process, is it?
Well, this fourth dimension matters a great deal. If you start thinking about the world we're facing and will continue to face increasingly, you realize that adaptability is at a premium. That's really what it's all about. Adaptability and the ability to self-reflect, to constantly monitor your learning and constantly monitor how to adapt your life.
Absolutely.
And so rather than subsuming this dimension of meta-learning under something else and have it be promptly neglected, we felt that as difficult as it is to have a fourth dimension, it needed to be highlighted. Now, one way to reduce the complexity from an actionable standpoint is that these three dimensions of skills, character, and meta-learning are all matrixed within knowledge. It's not knowledge or the other dimensions. It's the three dimensions matrixed within knowledge.
How has education changed since your bestseller, 21st Century Skills?
Well, there's a lot more understanding that an education is not strictly about old traditional knowledge. There's an understanding that skills matter. But every time jurisdictions try to make a change, they're stymied by their politics and by dogma. And so it was important to show how you would, as a curriculum designer, as a policymaker, you could make sense of all these requests and embed them in a way that's cohesive. And that's how the change has brought the need for more clarity of vision, a clarity of framework.
It seems most education leaders see the reference of 21st century learning and skills as passé. Do you encounter that?
Well, there's always that moniker, right? The moniker has been a wild success in the sense that it's used all over the world.
True.
But like everything humans do, wording becomes trite after a while. And although the concepts themselves have not been embedded fully, not anywhere near fully, people have tired of hearing the moniker. So that's the unfortunate part, which is, you know, the work still needs to be done. We still need to teach creativity a lot better, critical thinking, communication, collaboration. These are not over by any stretch. But, of course, people fatigue because the movement of standards redesign is much, much, much slower than people wish, and therefore fatigue sets in. So it's wording fatigue. It's not implementation fatigue. On the contrary, on the implementation side.
Now, what country is doing it right, in your opinion? Is there one particular country that you could point to that has advanced to the point where they're embracing the school of thought in your new book, Four-Dimensional Education?
Well, I would say that no country or jurisdiction does it all right, but some are further ahead than others. I think, for instance, of Singapore, and I think of New South Wales and Victoria in Australia.
Right.
They seem to be doing reasonably well along that path. And depending on where and when, perhaps another country, a couple of countries or jurisdictions come to mind, but these are the, I would say, the main three that come to mind. Now, in our center, we are happy to have Alberta and Ontario participate, and they too have made a lot of progress. But I would say that no jurisdiction has done enough to revisit what's already on the docket in terms of traditional knowledge, and that's creating overload. So that's what this book is trying to address, rethinking old knowledge in different ways so that we can lighten up what's no longer relevant. It's a question of relevance that we're raising.
It's interesting. I was at a conference before the holidays where Michael Fullan spoke, and he talked about courageous leadership. How important is leadership in the success equation here in transformation?
Well, leadership happens at several layers, and in essence, everyone is required to be a leader. It happens, of course, at the politician and policymaker level to have the courage to describe to the general population the changes that are befalling on it and the linkages to education and how education can help some of the aspects of the difficulties everyone is facing for employability or life happiness. And then there's courage at the level of school administrators. There's courage at the level of individual teachers. Every element of the system can use the courage to face a very difficult change. This is akin to the change we saw with the advent of the Industrial Revolution. And so we're going from a system that was tuned for mass schooling of traditional knowledge to a system that has to be personalized for learning not just traditional knowledge, but also modern knowledge and those skills, characters, qualities, and meta-learning competencies.
Absolutely. Huge step function. What's interesting is, you know, I refer to us as being smack in the middle of a digital revolution. Are we going to look back 50, 100 years from now and point to this era as the digital revolution versus the industrial revolution?
I think it's fairly clear that this will be the case, at least for some of us who spend a lot of time looking at what present-day technology and future technologies hold. It is clear we're seeing enormous jarring changes, and we've seen a lot of that happen because of electronics and computer technology. We're going to see a lot more happen with the extension of that into artificial intelligence and robotics. And then there's an entire new facet that's opening up with biotechnology, the ability to manipulate genes down to the letter, literally speaking, allowing us to perhaps eventually redesign humans, whether it's attributes or perhaps even intelligence. And what do we make of that in terms of ethics and so on? So just these two technologies are already opening up a host of complexities that we're not very well prepared to handle, whether it's for employability or ethics or any of these questions.
We are living in fascinating times.
And as you know, it's a wish and a curse simultaneously.
Well, I hearken back to Marshall McLuhan, who was a U of T professor, and to paraphrase, we create the machines, and then the machines kind of impact the way we interface with reality. And it's not always necessarily a good thing.
Correct. Well, technology, as you know so well, is an amplifier of human capabilities, and it amplifies the good, but it can also amplify the bad.
Absolutely.
And so we have to be really mindful of what is being done so that we can control the bad aspects of technology. For instance, the invention of the wheel has allowed us to carry heavier loads faster over larger distances, but the car also kills.
Yes.
So it's just a question of how it's used.
That's a great example. Hence, digital literacy, digital citizenship, all those things are so critical, those skills that we talked about earlier, and arming, our future leaders with those essential skills is critical. Now, here's a hypothetical question for you. Given there's so many moving parts in the education system, particularly in Canada, given the provincial jurisdiction, if you were an education minister, how would you go about change through your four-dimensional model? Let's take Ontario as an example where I'm based.
I'm not familiar with the specificities of Ontario, so this is more of a generic answer for any jurisdiction.
Right.
Think about it with the following metaphor. Education is an elephant, and the front legs are standards and assessments, and the hind legs are curriculum instruction and professional development. So far, a lot of the changes have been targeted at the back legs, so we've made some progress on curriculum instruction and on professional development, and I think by and large, systems understand they need to embrace project-based learning and more modern pedagogy. But as long as standards and assessments have not changed, we're still generating the same behavior in the end, mostly speaking. Yes, we have, of course, great advances, particularly in places like Ontario, but in the end, it's about 25% headroom that we have. We don't have 100% headroom unless we deeply redesign standards and assessments. And so that's one part of the analogy. To continue on with that, we're facing the wall of college entrance requirements. And that's what BC, British Columbia, has courageously done. They have faced up to their higher ed establishment and said, we need to change and we cannot be constrained by traditional, if not obsolete, entrance requirements. This is what we need to do for our population.
And excellent point.
That's the sort of courage that needs to be propagated throughout. And lastly, think of the parents as the driver on top of the elephants, but they're confused. They're kicking the poor elephant forward, not understanding that the front two legs are stuck because of politics and dogma. And they don't understand the wall of college entrance requirements in front of the elephants. And so they're in a sense, kicking the poor elephants, which ends up being the hind legs, particularly the teacher saying, well, move, move, move. And the teacher said, look, there's only so much I can do with all the constraints that are put on me. And the front legs need to move too for us to do a different job. So I think an analogy I would give as to how many things need to move in unison for the system to move.
That paints a fantastic picture, Charles. Thank you for that. Now, you know, and it all comes, you mentioned parents, and they're a key variable in the success equation, if you will, and making it real life for them. It comes down to, at the end of the day, when my boys, as I mentioned in our warm-up chat, when they were applying to business school, you know, you had to be in the 90s, you had to provide a video, so you needed great grades to get in. And it's about relevancy, and at the end of the day, you want your kids to be successful, you want them to have good jobs. And I look at Google, and, you know, Google is interesting, as I've been dealing with one of their guys, and they don't focus on credentials so much anymore in the hiring process. They look at more at about, it's more about skills and competencies. Is this a trend that you see that's emerging? That's where parents will start to feel better about the process of getting into university and getting jobs. You know, it's that process that, as you alluded to, is, you know, you hit the big wall.
It is a trend, but remember that Google is post-university.
Right.
The wall that you have mentioned related to your son, and which my daughter has faced too, relates to college entrance.
Right.
And that's what's coloring it for everybody. So in the end, Google may decide that, you know what, after 4 years of computer science, it still doesn't matter. I want to make sure that you know how to code.
Yeah.
That's easy to measure. And some other competencies that are a lot harder to assess.
That's sure.
One. Second, it's still about college entrance requirements first and foremost, because they're coloring what K-12 does at large, even for those who don't go into college.
Right.
And because we've had such attachment to objectivity in assessment, we have basically pushed down into measuring only elements of knowledge by and large.
Right.
Rather than broader measures of competencies.
And creativity and all those things, right?
Yes, and skills of types, of various types. So we have, in essence, diminished our view of what a student should be capable of being and doing. And that's what we're trying to regain here, knowing full well that the assessment of these competencies is going to be partially subjective, partially anecdotal, but that's how the real world functions in various organizations.
Absolutely.
As well.
And you mentioned the wall. It seems today in the hiring process, the wall is even higher when it comes to our youth finding jobs today. And there's certainly a mismatch that we see here in Canada. Huge, huge mismatch, you know. With certain jobs not being filled and excess supply of teachers looking for jobs, etc. Whether you ever reached, you know, it's never a perfect science, is it?
It's not, but at least, well, for one, any occupation advanced enough will always face a mismatch. You know, if you are very knowledgeable, the very, very new area of technology, for instance, there will always be a mismatch between supply and demand.
Sure.
That said, on a broader scale, there is a mismatch between STEM demand and STEM supply, as in science, technology, engineering, or math, as we all know. But more generally speaking, even with humanities, there's a mismatch between what employers or society requires in terms of critical thinking or courage or so on, versus what education systems deliver, because there's a difference between what we think a system delivers versus the reality of what it delivers. And very often we assume that just by studying the Greek text on courage, we'll be building courage in the students. Although, you know, jokingly, that requires a certain amount of courage even to go through that reading. But that aside, a lot of these competencies are going to be learned by doing, and that requires a different approach and a different focus on them rather than strictly focusing on the subject matter alone.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this, Charles.
You're most welcome, Robert. I would like to highlight one last thing.
Sure. I was going to ask you if you had any final thoughts to share.
I want to make sure that everyone understands that we're we're not talking about a false dichotomy of knowledge or skills or character or meta-learning. These are all working together. These are and propositions. So it is the hands, the head, and the heart, not one over the other. So thank you for taking the time, Robert.
My pleasure. Thank you again for your time this afternoon, Charles. That was Charles Fidel, best-selling author and global education thought leader. Be sure to check out www.mindsharelearning.com to get your latest issue of the Mindshare Learning Report. My name is Robert Martellacci, and until next time, keep the digital learning curve steep.